Good evening. It is 5 p.m. on Tuesday, April 9th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In a message from the Downtown Kingston BIA, Kingston Humane Society celebrates 140 years with a free concert in Springer Market Square. The Kingston Humane Society, the oldest of its kind in Canada, is celebrating 140 years with a concert on Friday, August 23rd in Springer Market Square at 7 p.m. Headlining this event is Juno nominee, three-time Maple Blues Fest Female Vocalist of the Year, and hometown favorite, Miss Emily. Tunes for Tales, celebrating 140 years of compassion, produced by the Downtown Kingston BIA, also features local band The Wilderness and songwriting phenom, Evan Rotella. Gord Hunter, executive director of the Kingston Humane Society, states, quote, 140 years in any field is worth celebrating. But in animal welfare, that equates to tens of thousands of lives saved, and that deserves a party, end quote. Mayor Brian Patterson will be on hand to welcome attendees and get the festivities underway. The concert is free to attend, and while donations will be accepted, Hunter confirms that's not the event's main objective. Hunter states, our goal is to have everyone who has ever adopted, fostered, volunteered, donated, or dropped off a stray animal join us in Springer Market Square for a giant community celebration, end quote. Friday night's free concert kicks off a full weekend of pet-related events and activities, with details coming soon. In a message from the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, hands-on foraging workshops return to KFPL's Isabel Turner and Calvin Park branches. Foraging for the Seasons is back at the Kingston Frontenac Public Library this month. Led by experienced forager Sheila Nemskog, these workshops teach participants how to identify and harvest local wild food. From April through November 2024, KFPL will host 8 engaging workshops, each blending classroom-style learning with hands-on outdoor exploration. The April and May sessions will be held at the Isabel Turner branch, while those from June to November will take place at the Calvin Park branch. Registration for each workshop opens a month before the session at calendar.kfpl.ca. Given the region's brief harvesting windows, attendees are encouraged to join multiple workshops to maximize learning. Jake Miller, librarian, adult programming, states, quote, urban foraging is both a valuable skill and an enriching experience. Foraging for the Seasons provides practical knowledge and hands-on practice so that community members can build a meaningful connection with the natural world, end quote. Nemsok brings knowledge and experience to her workshops, drawing on her upbringing in Northern Ontario, credentials in plant-based medicine from Cornell University, and a Master Naturalist certificate from Lakehead University. She empowers participants with the skills to connect deeply with nature and integrate eco-conscious practices into their lives. Miller states, quote, by learning to forage, participants not only enrich their own lives, but also contribute to preserving our world for future generations. Register today and take another step towards a greener future, end quote. In a message from the City of Kingston, dive against debris. Shore volunteers needed for water cleanup event on April 20th. The City of Kingston, in partnership with Cork and Neptune Insulation Diving, is inviting non-diving shore volunteers to participate in a water cleanup event at Portsmouth Olympic Harbor on Saturday, April 20th at 10 a.m. Certified divers, under the direction of Neptune Insulation Diving, will be removing debris from the marina water. Volunteers stationed on land will help gather and sort the retrieved debris. 20 pairs of work gloves will be available for volunteers. This important role ensures responsible and sustainable cleanup efforts and supports the goal of a healthier marine environment. Neptune Insulation Diving is a full professional association of diving instructors that has organized multiple dive against debris events over the years. This event aligns with the mission of the Paddy Aware Foundation, an environmental nonprofit organization dedicated to driving local initiatives for global ocean and water conservation, with the help of recreational scuba divers. As part of the city's commitment to environmental stewardship, they proudly support the Clean Marine Program by Boating Ontario. This program promotes best environmental practices to reduce and prevent water, air, and land pollution associated with recreational boating activities. Let's work together to preserve our local marine environment and ensure cleaner, healthier water for generations to come. To volunteer or for more information, please contact Neptune and Salacia Diving by email at info@neptunesalacia.com. In another message from the City of Kingston, City continues efforts to apply daytime camping ban at Bell Park. The City of Kingston remains committed to applying the Parks Use Bylaw in all municipally owned parks as directed by City Council, and will continue to do so going forward. City staff opted to temporarily suspend enforcement operations the past few days in a commitment to maintaining the safety and well-being of everyone, including individuals sheltering in the park, advocates, staff, community partners, and neighbors. Bylaw crews have encountered significant challenges as groups of protesters have gathered at the entrances to Bell Park and have used logs to create barriers to entry. Paige Agnew, Commissioner, Growth and Development Services, states, quote, "We acknowledge this could be creating a level of confusion for people sheltering in Bell Park particularly. City staff have been explaining to people for a few weeks what will be happening this week and also distributing information about the ban on daytime camping in efforts to ensure lots of awareness. But now we're unable to move forward as we said we would. We acknowledge this may be causing confusion or distress for some people sheltering at Bell Park. The health and safety of everyone involved is extremely important to us," end quote. Notwithstanding the challenges, the city remains committed to applying the Parks Use Bylaw's prohibition on daytime sheltering in city parks. It also remains committed to supporting those impacted in a fair and reasonable way. The City of Kingston remains dedicated to finding safe, supportive housing for people experiencing homelessness. Once again, that was the latest message from the City of Kingston regarding the Bell Park encampment. Before we get into more local news, I'm turning it to our weather and traffic. For your weather report this evening, we're expecting mainly cloudy skies. We'll have a few showers beginning late this evening and ending overnight, then a 40% chance of showers. There is a risk of thunderstorm late this evening and after midnight. Winds will be 20 kilometers per hour, gusting to 40, becoming light near midnight. We have a low of 8. Looking forward to tomorrow, Wednesday, April 10th, we're having clear skies in the morning with a high of 17. UV index will be 5 or moderate. For the night, we'll have cloudy periods with a low of plus 4. On Thursday, April 11th, we'll have rain with a high of 18 and a low of 10. On Friday, we're expecting more rain and windy conditions with a high of 12 and showers at night with a low of plus 3. Finally, looking forward to the weekend, we're expecting cloudy skies and some lingering showers. Now for your weekly CFRC traffic report. Reduced road restrictions aren't affecting Kingston. Heavy trucks and loads are restricted on city roads where posted. These restrictions help reduce damage to roads in the spring. LaSalle Causeway. PSPC wishes to advise users that the LaSalle Causeway is fully closed to motorists, cyclists, and pedestrians until further notice. In road closures, University Avenue Union to Earl is still closed until May 29th for the Queen's JDUC project. King Street tragically hip way to Place d'Armes is closed today and tomorrow for event-related parking and storage at Slush Puppy Place. In parking disruptions, the Hanson Memorial Parking Structure Restoration Project is underway. The work will take place throughout all levels of the building. The work is planned to conclude in late December 2024. The work will be completed in phases to allow the building to remain open to public parking for the duration of the project. It is anticipated that no more than 50% of the available 271 parking spaces will be closed at any time. There is also parking availability at the Chen Memorial and Robert Bruce Memorial parking garages in the two adjacent blocks to the west. In other delays, Queen Street, Montreal to Sydenham, expect an eastbound lane closure until May 15th. Detours will be in place for the duration of the closure. That wraps up your weather and traffic report for this evening, and now back to more local news. Thank you. Now back to more local news. The Queens Community Housing Residents Association, QCHRA, an association which was formed by people who live in housing managed by Queens, is speaking out regarding the sudden rent increase of 10.5% that they were made aware of in late December, as well as the disappointing series of discussions with the university over the past few months. Chloe and Valentina, members of QCHRA and graduate students at Queens, sat down with CFRC to discuss where they are now with Queens Community Housing and what their next steps are after their last discussion with the university in March. Here's a bit of our conversation.
To start us off, I was wondering if you could introduce yourselves and share a little bit about QCHRA just in general for folks who aren't aware.
Sure. My name is Chloe. I'm a postdoctoral fellow here at Queens.
My name is Valentina. I'm a PhD student in the English department.
And the Queens Community Housing Residents Association, or QCHRA, is a group that has been formed by the people who live in community housing residences. So that's housing that's managed by Queens, and that would be John Orr and Ann Clacken are the two sites. These are predominantly grad students. And basically, QCHRA is kind of like a union that you would have at your job, but instead of being for people who work together, it's people who live in the same buildings. Mm-hmm. So we kind of formed together after it became clear that Queens Community Housing was planning to make a number of changes to our living situations. This included a huge rent increase, much above the provincial guidelines. So the provincial guidelines are 2.5% per year, and Queens Community Housing was intending to raise our rent 10.5% mm-hmm. for the coming year. And they recently revealed that they're planning to do that again for the year after that, and then again for the year after that. So that's altogether a 35% rent increase. They're also instituting a number of other changes that would be very problematic for people who live there. Mm-hmm. Things like limiting how long you can stay in housing. So even if you're still a student, if you've completed as many years as they believe it should take you to complete your graduate degree, then they will evict you from your home.
Yes, on this thing was quite funny. I think we will talk about that later, but we had a meeting with community mm-hmm. housing on March 6th, I believe. Mm-hmm. And at this meeting, we said, so are you planning to institute a limit of 3 years for PhD students? And they said, yes. And we're like, well, first of all, it's not 3 years, mm-hmm. it's four. And second, it's not four either. Because realistically speaking, nobody finishes their PhD in 4 years. Mm-hmm. And they were surprised by that, which is like, didn't you research this? This isn't exactly, occult knowledge known to mm-hmm. very few people. This is very well known. So they have imposed a 3-year lease renewal limit for PhD students, a 1 year for master's students. And the thing that is intriguing, so to speak, is that many students who get their master's here, they usually think about getting their PhD here. Mm-hmm. And you would think, oh, so you get 1 year as a master's student and then 3 years as a PhD student? No, you get your lease renewal as a master's student.
What it is if you are a master's student and you get to roll over into your mm-hmm. PhD, you're only allowed to stay in community housing for 4 years. So you'd only mm-hmm. be able to stay for the first 2 years of your PhD, and then you would be evicted. So even though you've started a new degree, a completely different degree, and you're still a student at Queens, they would not allow you to stay in housing.
Yeah. And I believe these changes came quite suddenly as well. If people just received notices, is that sort of how it went?
Yeah, so mm-hmm. actually it was quite this like strange process where in October community housing had a meeting with SGPS, and in that meeting they mentioned, oh, by the way, we're planning to make these changes to housing. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about it? And SGPS said, no, you can't do that. These changes are bad, and we can't see anybody thinking these are good changes. And they let our union, which is PSAC 901, know about these changes, which is how all of us found out. None of us knew, and Community Housing was not communicating to us that these were coming down the line. It was only because SGPS let us know. And then they kept completely silent about it until we heard from them. So on December 20th, which is already after most people have left for the winter holidays, like over that break, on December 20th, they slid notices under our doors, letting us know how much the rent increase would be and letting us know that, that this was non-negotiable, and also demanding that we sign our lease renewal request a full month earlier than usual, which we think was a way of getting people to basically like kind of have to do it right away rather than like letting people consider as they would have been able to do before, because they wanted us to agree to that that rent increase, which this is also the first time we heard the actual number, that 10.5%. They had not been at all sharing what that would be before they slipped that notice under our doors.
It is worth noting, by the way, that we signed a lease renewal, like we applied to renew our lease. Our new leases have not come yet. They are coming in April. We don't know when. Allegedly, they're coming in April. But I guess that, to be fair, and it's not much fairness, they did send an email in November, quite late in November, though, where they say that we could check on the site for the new fair access policy changes. Now, I say to be fair, but... when you go to that site, you can find their proposals, but they're not very clear. Like they did say, we are thinking of raising rent. They did not give a number. They did not say how much. They did say nothing. They are saying, we are thinking of renewing Anklagen. They're not saying when. They're not saying, they're just thinking about it in the future. It's... it's implied that it's going to be essentially a renovation, but they're not saying that. They're saying we are thinking of putting a lease renewal. They're not very clear about that. So, yeah, they did send out an email in November that wasn't very clear, sending us to a page in the site that is not very clear. So, yes, in their defense, they did that.
Yeah, we're just feeling this lack of transparency basically throughout all of this.
Yeah, I think that's sort of like our big complaints, other than, of course, all of these changes that obviously none of us agree with. The lack of transparency has been, like, really upsetting. A lot of people obviously live in this housing. They rely on it to be able to have their families live. Many people who live in housing have children, multiple children sometimes they've got parents living with them, people live there with spouses and partners, and everybody kind of relies on this because, as you're probably aware, like graduate students are paid very little at this university, exceptionally little, and the cost of living, of course, as everybody knows, is going up and up and up in this city and across the country and in the world, let's be fair. It is certainly going up everywhere, but funding packages are not going up. A majority of graduate students in this university earn less than $30,000 a year, often substantially less than that. And that amount is what they're paid, not considering that they have to pay tuition back out of that. So for every amount that somebody earns, you have to take like $8,000 off of that at least to account for tuition. And then they're expected to live on that. They have to pay rent, they have to pay for food, they have to take care of their children, they have to take care of their families, all on like $10,000 a year, sometimes less.
Chloe and Valentina also discussed their last meeting with the university on March 6th, where they also stated to the university that they are planning to bring this to the landlord-tenant board.
So you're given that 10.5 figure sort of in December, and then March 6th, you had that conversation. Was that sort of the last formal communication that you had with Queens Community Housing?
Yeah. So basically, one of the things that sort of community housing has been pointing to this whole time is that as an educational landlord, they are allowed to exceed the provincial guidelines of rent increases because they're exempt from that increased limit, which is true. However, we formed this tenants association, the residents association, in October. So right at the end of October, we formed this group, and they acknowledge that our group exists. And there is an exemption to the exemption that they're using, where if a tenants association exists, they have to consult with that association before they raise rent. They have to. Legally, they must. Like, it is required that they do that, regardless of the fact that they're exempt because they're an educational landlord. But they didn't, because, of course, they slipped those notes under our doors without ever speaking to any of us, even though they acknowledged that they knew that we existed. So we went to this meeting with them on March 6th, as you brought up. At this meeting, it did not go well. I think if anybody has been following the way that conversations with upper administration has been going at this university thus far, it's a lot of people saying, like, the way that this is being handled is unacceptable and the things that you're doing are unacceptable, and the administration going, we're listening, we're hearing you. And then they don't do anything about it, right? They're listening. They're always listening, but they're never doing anything about it. It was very much that kind of experience. But because they knew that legally they had to consult with us, they called it a consultation, but it was certainly not that. It was largely an opportunity for them to tell us what was going to happen and then to stand there and listen while we told them things and then to disregard that at that meeting that we had on March 6th. We obviously all said, we do not agree with any of the changes that you're making. And we asked them to say very clearly, when were these changes made? When was it decided that these changes were going to come through? And they said, you know when these changes were made. And we were like, could you tell us when that was? And they said, in December, when you got your notice. And we said, interesting. So that's before March that you did that, which means that they have admitted verbally, and we have a recording of this, they've admitted that they did not consult with residents before they made this change. So it is an illegal rent increase. Whether or not they're going to try to go ahead with it, that's a different question. But it is certainly illegal, and we are intending to bring this to the landlord-tenant board to sort of fight against this as best we can.
Yeah, so that would be sort of your next step after if you're not getting a response in the next bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have not been in communication with the landlord since that meeting. They did, obviously they heard us say that, and they seemed quite freaked out by it, and they stopped communicating with us. They also stopped the meeting right there. And then quite recently, about like a week or less ago, they sent an email to tenants saying, we're pushing back the date when we're sending you our leases, the new leases. So they're supposed to come out in March, and now they're coming out in April. So we don't know what changes they're intending to make, if any, if they're going to try to, like, work around it and say, well, we did technically consult with you. So, like, even though you disagreed, but, like, we have the very firm, clear proof that what they're doing is illegal.
They also described what the university could do to prevent QCHRA from bringing this issue to the landlord-tenant board.
And you're saying the next step is sort of that application to the tenant board. And I was wondering, what could the university do before that to prevent that? What are you asking for, pretty much, that they could do that would actually remedy the situation, at least to some extent?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, we're asking them to meet with us and actually meet with us. We don't want another meeting where they're presenting to us and then they sit down and listen to all our questions, and then, which is what they did. They refused to respond in the moment to each individual question. They sat down and wrote down every question and then got up to answer them, and therefore were able to not answer many of the questions that were asked of them. We would like an actual consultation where they actually speak to residents. We would like them to obviously not raise the rent by 10.5% this year. And we'd also like to really push them to scale back their planned further rent increases for the future. We're also asking them to consider other ways of increasing the housing supply in Kingston.
Basically, what we're asking them is to realize that we are smart people. Surely, they know we are smart people. They wouldn't have accepted us to this program if we weren't. So you cannot come here and just expect us to believe everything that you're telling us. You cannot come here and say that, this lease renewal limit will help make housing more affordable, because it will make other people get into housing. because it is pretty clear to everybody that you're not really giving more people housing. You're just creating some sort of like a merry-go-round of housing where people just keep on circling around this. Are you fixing anything there? Or are you just mocking me right now? Have you just decided to make it difficult just for no reason? So like, have some respect, I think, is really the baseline. So like, have some respect. And once you see me as a person with a brain who is able to understand what you're telling me, then maybe also converse with me and maybe we can reach some sort of understanding.
Finally, Chloe and Valentina shared where you can keep up with QCHRA and support them.
If people are interested in like hearing more about what we're up to and what we're doing, they can follow us on Instagram at Queens Community Tenants. You can also check out our Linktree, which is like linktr.ee/QCHRA23. And that has like all of our information. We'd especially appreciate, we have like a petition up there right now that non-tenants are welcome to sign to show solidarity with us and to show that they disagree with the changes Queens is making. So we really ask people to sign that if they're willing. Keep your eyes peeled. We're going to be making some moves along with like the Students versus Cuts teams and other groups like that to start sort of bringing our message more fully into view. We really invite people to keep their eyes peeled and to stand with us on this because we're not alone in this. We are certainly just one part, as we said, of the austerity struggle. And we would love to get more involved in the broader community.
That is all things current in Kingston for this evening. Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming, made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca, and be sure to tune in tomorrow for more local news at 5 p.m. on Today in YGK. Stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.